Hi, I'm Melanie. I'm a compulsive overeater and anorexic. Thank you to the fellows who approached me and asked me to do service by speaking at the meeting today. Grateful for the opportunity, as always, to do service. So I wrote a little outline in front of me because I do have attention deficit and I will waver. So I'm going to start with talking about like my earliest memories of my eating behaviors and go from there. When I was young, I remember growing up in a very toxic family environment. My parents are also very much food addicts. Addiction runs deep in my family. It doesn't matter if it's cocaine, alcohol, gambling, whatever you name it, somebody in my family is addicted to it. And I didn't have that awareness growing up. I just knew something was off. You know, in terms of like my family and other families. And I didn't learn it until later in life. However, I grew up with a lot of emotional abuse, a lot of just name calling and being told I'd never be good enough, that I needed to do more. I had very like first child syndrome, firstborn syndrome of like I was held to an extremely high bar and I was reminded every day of how high that bar was, to the point where I stuffed my feelings with food, as many of us in OA have. I would sneak bites out of the pot when I was asked to put the leftovers away for dinner. I remember stealing sips of the soda that was meant for my mother in the fridge, and then having my younger sibling take the fall for it because she'd go easier on him. I remember, sneaking food later in the evenings after my parents went to bed. I remember a lot of that. And I remember that when I would overeat and it was like visible when my abusive parent, my primary abuser could tell that I was overeating, then would come the backlash. Then it would just be further emotional abuse. Then it was like, you're so fat, you're good for nothing, nobody will ever love you. And I carried that weight, not only physically, but emotionally, mentally, spiritually as well. I carried that weight with me into OA 1 year ago when I was 31 years old. So we're talking about 31 years or so of that. So knowing that that's kind of where I came from and the environment I grew up in, I had this abusive parent who not only called me names, told me I would never amount to anything, but then also struggled with her own relationship with food, with her own eating behaviors, would decide she was going to go on a diet and everybody else in the household was going to go on a diet, would decide that this is the time we're now eating dinner, would con and it would always change. It would always change. So nothing was consistent. My food was all over the place. Then I went to college as an adult and I was away from home. I'm a broke college student, right? So all of the events on campus, if it listed free food, your girl was there. It didn't matter what was available, what it was made out of. It was free, you're gonna eat it. And that just, avalanched over the coming years of my young adulthood. And then I lost my first fiance in 2010. Actually today was her birthday, or maybe it was yesterday. And the anniversary of her passing is coming up on July 6th. So it's incredible that this time of year, that's usually really difficult for me, I'm sitting here in front of you all speaking today. That moment, my eating took a drastic turn. As I was grieving the loss of her, I grew further and further away from any concept of a higher power. I wanted absolutely nothing to do with one. You could not tell me that God loved me. You could not tell me that God had a higher plan for me. You could not tell me that my life would get better beyond my imagination. I did not want to hear it. I took my relationship with food and used food to manipulate my sleeping behaviors, to numb myself, to disconnect, to detach completely. So I would either overeat or starve myself so my blood sugar would crash and I could get some sleep. And I would sleep for 20, 22 hours. So there's just this pendulum of my disease. Remember, I identified both as an overeater and an anorexic, of swinging to the overeating because I was starving myself, but then swinging back to the starving myself because I didn't want to feel anything. And that cycle carried on over the next, let's do the math, 10 years. I would restrict when I was overwhelmed or stressed out from work. I worked in the restaurant industry for 16, 17 years now. And that meant long hours, constantly on my feet, constantly moving. What was the last thing I was going to do? Take care of myself. And then at night I was alone and I would binge. And that just, that relationship back and forth of not eating and then over that constant. And then COVID happened. And as many people probably know, the restaurant industry was extremely struggling because everything shut down March of last year. And that meant that I was unemployed. And I had been unemployed times before. However, I didn't have a promise of a new, you know, opportunity or new role or anything in front of me at that time, right? Everything stopped. And I was alone with the food. My partner has a full-time position as an essential employee. I was home alone all day. And at night when he went to bed, and grocery delivery was extremely accessible in our area. And when that unemployment bump hit, I went to my husband and I said to him, hey, we need to increase our grocery budget. Hey, we need to, and I would find ways to justify it, right? Well, I'm cooking from scratch more. Well, you know, we need to be able to tip the driver. We have to pay for the delivery fee. And like, I would just, you know, whatever I needed to say to buy several hundred dollars worth of food. So I would spend easily over $700 on a grocery trip's worth of food that was supposed to last us the month. And my part of the food would be gone in less than 2 weeks. Family size bags of this, you know, family size, like, I mean, we would order from a wholesale club. So everything was bulk sized. Everything was made for like, you know, 20 plus servings, and that'd be gone in 2 or 3 days. Just that one thing that was meant for that many servings. So I'm just, yeah, here I am. And that, you know, during that time sitting alone eating, because what else was there for me to do? Process my feelings? You know, work through the depression? No. Why would I do that? So it got to a point where I had been on a binge. And I remember the next day feeling horribly sick. Major indigestion, which wasn't uncommon. I was all too familiar with antacids. But I remember I was at a store shopping and I could feel my bowels starting to cramp up. And I remember panicking because it's COVID. There's no restrooms open. And I like bought my things and I rushed home. Thank my higher power that that store is literally like 2 or 3 buildings down from where I live. And I was in and out of the bathroom expelling, you know, what I had consumed the night before for several hours. And I remember that bottom for me was so devastating, humiliating, and filled with shame, filled with guilt. I felt so isolated in that moment. I was scared. I felt so alone. And I thankfully had already been in another fellowship for about 2.5 years, I think, at that point. And one member in all of those couple of years I've been going to meetings, one time in a meeting, cross shared that she was also in OA. And I can't even tell you how long ago that was before June of last year. That was the person I texted. I texted my sponsor from that fellowship at the time, and I texted that person. And I was like, can you tell me more about Overeaters Anonymous? That woman is why I'm sitting here now today, about a year later. She helped me get to my first meeting. She became my temporary sponsor, walked me through the first 12 days. She got me my first piece of literature for OA. She bought me a virtual ticket to the convention that was coming up, where I heard other people speak on their relationship with overeating and restricting. And that's what kept me coming, was that connection to other fellows, other people who understood what I said. I remember the first few weeks of me in OA, I was sobbing, I was crying. I'm telling everybody my whole life story about how awful my biological mother was, how terribly my father gaslighted me, you know, all of these things that I'm carrying, all these resentments that I was carrying for so long. And then talked about how I ate in response to that, or how I did. At the time, I wasn't even aware of the restricting on the level that I am today, right? I was just so focused on the binging. And I would remember, I would say the things that I did or the things that I felt, and I would watch everybody's heads on the thumbnails in Zoom nodding. And I could see the yeses and the mm-hmms and the yups. And I knew that I found my people. I knew that was my tribe. Because no one before coming to OA understood that experience, understood that perspective. And I had no idea what a food addict was. I had no idea what that meant, or what abstinence was, or any of those terms, right? What does food sobriety look like? And I kept coming. And I found many different meetings, and I tried, you know, I go to speaker meetings, I've gone to literature meetings, I have gone to different diversity meetings for different, you know, parts of my identity. I've gone to, like, you name it, phone meetings, et cetera. I check it out, group chats on, like, WhatsApp, any form of meetings, Facebook meetings, I will check it out now. I'm so open. So then, you know, I'm doing this stuff in OA. And I'm cruising along with, like, the binging was easy for me to put food down. Easy for me. On the, I believe it was the 17th of this month, I am 11 months abstinent from binging. However, my sponsor, my first sponsor, had a relapse with her binging in October of last year. So I was in OA for a few months at that point. And I went, okay, I understand why you have to let me go. And I was like, okay, I'll find a sponsor. And I made it through the holidays. Like, I, you know, planned my food. It was just my husband and I, home, we eat very differently. So it was very easy for me to plan my meal, prep it, whatever, stick to, like, my food plan. But then something with my parents of origin happened around the end of December. And after that, my restricting really took a spiral. I noticed myself, like, obsessively weighing my food on the food scale. I didn't want to go 0.1 ounces over or 0.1 ounces under. It had to be as exact as possible, to the point where, like, I was, like, picking food at it. Yeah. And then I would justify, you know, cutting back further, right? I don't need that many vegetables. I don't need this much grain. I don't, you know, I'm not, that's too much. To the point where on January 5th would be my abstinence date now. So January 4th-ish, I didn't eat. I had, like, a coffee that morning. That afternoon, I grabbed a very small snack because I was going to run errands. And then it was 6:30 in the evening, and all I had all day was a cup of coffee and, like a piece of fruit. And a tiny little protein shake. It was nothing, nothing. And I painstakingly dragged myself into the kitchen that evening, and I waited my next meal. And then I allowed myself a half meal because I was still starving. That was my new bottom. I went to a meeting on January 6th. I hopped on. There was that 5 minutes left. Thank you. Okay, great. I hopped on. There was 15 minutes left in this meeting, and I stayed for the, they call it the after party, right? Some people call it the parking lot talk, whatever. And I remember sharing that I wasn't okay. And someone private messaged me, "Hey, I'm a sponsor. Can you call me at 3 this afternoon?" And that was only like 2 hours from then. So I was like, "Yeah, sure, I can do that. Absolutely." Called this woman. She said, "All right, if you're going to work with me, you're going to get your own copy of the big book and you're going to call me every day." And I was desperate. I was like, "Okay, you got it. I will get my own physical copy. I will call you every day. What time am I calling you? Let's do it." And I thrive with structure. So this relationship has sustained, 5.5 months now, and going. Yeah, I am now like today with this renewed round of abstinence for me. It was 5 months on the 5th, higher power willing, July 5th. Will be 6 months of abstinence from a relapse. I'm doing things that I could have never imagined myself doing. If you told me I was going to call a stranger from, well, she's not a stranger anymore, but somebody from another state every single day, the girl who gets phone anxiety, no. If you told me that I was going to be reading the big book, which is what my husband reads for his addiction, I would have been like, "No, we don't do that." You told me I was going to go to two fellowship meetings a day? No. You told me I was going to reach out to people? Ha! And yeah, here I am sitting here right now telling you that I send somebody my food every single day, that I commit to eating everything that is on that plan every single day and nothing else. And if it changes, that I let her know. What? Who does that? Someone who's crazy, someone who's desperate, and that someone is me. Yeah, so I'm sitting here today already knowing that my higher power has been so patient, has been so loving, has been so protective of me for so long, and has been waiting for me to connect. And I needed those bottoms and those moments to start spiritually healing and to start actually processing all of the trauma and resentments and everything I've been carrying with me. And it is only by starting every morning with a spiritual practice before I get out of bed, before I even go to the bathroom, before I take my medications, I pray.
2 minutes.
Because 2 minutes, thank you. I'll wrap up. Because I wake up and the first thing I think about is what I'm eating that day. So I start with that. I pray throughout the day. I pray if I'm transitioning between tasks or different projects. I pray if the driver in front of me on the road is not driving the way that I would like. I pray before work-related phone calls. I pray before running errands or chores. Like, do I pray. I turn it over because I don't got this. And I would not be sitting here right now with a healthy relationship, with dropping weight, and with food if it was up to me. Like, nah. Yeah. So there was a page I was reading earlier in the big book before the meeting today, and it's the end of the foreword to third edition reads, "Each day, somewhere in the world, recovery begins when one alcoholic talks with another alcoholic, sharing experience, strength, and hope." I'm trusting that there are things I shared today that someone needed to hear, and I can't wait to hear your story as well. Thank you for listening, and I will pass.